what I have done is contact the city of Homer and ask them if there were questions that they would like addressed or issues they would like to hear about. And also I contacted our sister station up in Kenai, KDLL. First of all, when is Congress going back into session?
The Senate will be in session this coming Monday, May the 4th. The House is not scheduled to come in next week. Their return has not been publicly noticed. It will be challenging because we're still expected to follow the protocols related to social distancing.
Does that mean you'll be working in a mask?
Well, I probably will be. The guidance in terms of what will be required in the Capitol building and in the Senate office building will be provided that information tomorrow, hopefully, at the latest. Instructions on masks, how many people can be gathering in specific areas, access by the public. This is a brand new way of operation, at least for the time being.
This question comes from City Hall. They want to hear from you about how seasonal businesses can now qualify for SBA loans. At first, they were excluded, but it's so important in Alaska that now seasonal businesses can apply for these loans.
It is absolutely critical when the CARES Act was initially passed to not have a recognition of the seasonality of a workforce was a very significant flaw. So the delegation worked really round the clock to get Treasury to address this. Because what was happening was many Alaskan businesses were out of the opportunity to access the $349 billion fund. And with a replenishment of the fund going into place on Monday, we wanted to make sure that at least with the second round, those seasonal businesses would be accommodated. So what we have done is to address the payroll period that was the operative factor. So what happened was by a rule change that allows seasonal businesses to choose a different 12-week expense period when they apply for the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP, being able to do so in a period that more accurately reflects their operating payroll rather than being limited to that time constraint between March of this year and June. What we have done is in this rule change recognize that the seasonal businesses need to have flexibility to choose that 12-week period so it accurately reflects the payroll when they're in full operations. Being able to calculate the business's average monthly payroll costs and then gain allowance to greater access to the PPP loan itself. So it was a flaw, an oversight, one that we worked from day one to try to get addressed. It was unfortunate that it took an additional 2 weeks to do it. That has been addressed. Another one that I think folks in the region would be interested in. Right now, your crew on a fishing vessel, the owner of the boat identifies you on their 1099. Under the way that the PPP is operating currently, the eligibility for the crew member and actually for the boat owner to be able to account for those folks on his payroll, the 1099 kicks them out. So we're trying to get further guidance and clarification so that individual crew members do not have to file their own application. So there's still some wrinkles that we're working with PPP, and as we hear from folks about where those problems are, please contact us as soon as possible. We're working through them.
While we're on the subject of CARES appropriation, how much of the $300 million in CARES appropriation for fisheries disaster relief is likely to come to Alaska, and how will that be divided up?
Well, it's a great question. As you point out, there's $300 million in fisheries assistance. So what's happening now is NOAA is still developing this implementation plan for the distribution. The delegations teams have been communicating with Department of Commerce weighing in, giving our input there. The process has taken longer than we had hoped, but we're continuing to put pressure on NOAA and Commerce to get it done, get it moving. In terms of estimates as to what Alaska might receive, again, we're not sure. It is not unreasonable to expect that we should receive a fair amount of that fisheries assistance, but keep in mind these are funds that are shared throughout the fisheries around the country. $300 million to be shared around all the fisheries doesn't go a long ways. That may be true, but what we have done is we have established an authorization in place, which is significant for fisheries disaster funding. So this is not like seeking a disaster declaration and then waiting 2 years to get the payout from that. This is something like we have done with the PPP now two times. We would have an opportunity to replenish this fund.
Are you saying that NOAA would be administering those funds and dividing them up?
NOAA is not the one that would implement that plan. Their task as the oversight agency working with the Department of Commerce is to develop the implementation plan for the distribution. You know, some of it's based on formula funding, some of it's based on population. So that's what's happening as we're trying to get these CARES funds out, is working through the departments, through the agencies to develop the distribution or the spend plan and do it quickly because everyone is looking for this assistance.
If you can be any more specific, what can be done to facilitate Alaskans getting the economic injury disaster loans and the Paycheck Protection Funds?
Yeah. The thing we had to do was we needed to replenish both of those funds. So the PPP, an additional $310 billion, the economic injury disaster, that was plussed up by an additional $50 billion. That leverages some $350 billion in loan opportunities. I will be cautionary here, though, on the EIDL. The PPP was back online on Monday, slammed in the opening hours as people were trying to get their applications in and lenders were trying to get in line there. The EIDL program, that portal, was not opened on Monday. The department had to do some reprogramming because with the supplemental to CARES, we allowed for an expansion to agriculture. And by doing so, they needed to do some reprogramming. We were told that EIDL portal was supposed to be up by today. Now, I haven't heard from anyone today to tell me whether or not that is online, but we had heard from Alaskans on Monday and then some yesterday saying, hey, wait a minute, I thought you plussed up the EIDL, and it's still telling me that they're not accepting applications. It is just a timing issue, so do not give up on that. I know people are frustrated because it's been hard to get through to SBA. It's been hard to get through on many of the agencies to try to get additional information. I hear from people that are trying to get through to the IRS to find where their direct assistance payment may be and have been frustrated with the systems.
Now, the only way Alaska can have much of a tourism charter fishing season this year is if the ban on interstate travel and 14-day quarantine requirements are relaxed. Are there any chance of testing capabilities ramping up to the point where that could happen safely?
Your statement is exactly right. The way that we're going to be able to get back to work and the way that people are going to feel safe to come to a place like Alaska, if we have greater certainty as to capabilities and the availability of testing, which will, as you point out, allow us to relax on the travel restrictions. The effort is considerable. Alaska oftentimes is disadvantaged because we are a rural state that is kind of isolated. But in this instance, there's being some very specific attention paid just to those rural areas that are isolated, who, if they were to see an outbreak, it could be devastating. And we've seen history demonstrate that just 100 years ago. So making sure that we have the availability of testing is something that is aggressively being pursued. In fairness, it's not quick enough. It's not quick enough for those small businesses that are suffering every day because they can't open up their shop on the spit or their little restaurant or they're just not seeing the revenues come into town that they had anticipated. The charter guys, everybody's canceling their trips. It can't come quick enough for anybody. Yesterday, I started off my day with an overview and a briefing from the Rockefeller Foundation on a national testing initiative, kind of a all-team, all-effort front. Moved from there to conversation with head of the White House task force specific to testing, Admiral Giraud. He has been working very closely with Dr. Zink here in the state, talking in great detail about the impact to the fisheries if we can't provide for security to the communities, security to the industry that's trying to prosecute a fishery, and security to the fishermen themselves. It's a push at all levels to not only get more into production, but to make sure that we're not just limiting ourselves to one test here, that we're looking to different applications as maybe suited better in different areas or again, trying to get students back into school or frontline workers in a safe place at a clinic or folks that are working at a seafood processing facility.
Senator McConnell's publicly suggesting that states should choose bankruptcy or consider it as an option to their financial woes. And given that the price of oil funds our budget, North Slope crude has been around $10 a barrel and far less lately. Do you support the senator's bankruptcy suggestion for the state of Alaska?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. First of all, states can't declare bankruptcy. The situation that we're facing in Alaska right now with really all pillars of our economy just really devastated right now. You look at the tourist industry, seafood, fisheries. There are some challenges that we've got to work through before you can safely prosecute those fisheries. Oil and gas, as you have noted, not only is demand down, but you've got so much supply out there that producers are prorating up on the slope coming down into Valdez because we're full up because the demand just isn't there, and that's what's happening as a function of the price. And then you throw in Saudi Arabia and Russia and all that comes with that. You look at the situation up north right now, and you throw in the fact that our state government is being powered off of the revenues from oil that we invest in the market, and the market not thriving. It is not a good place for us to be. But I think we also recognize that this is exactly why we are devoting such an extraordinary level of resource not only to Alaska, but to states around the country. $1.3 billion coming to the state of Alaska as part of this state stabilization. That is going to help to the hospitals, on the education side, to individuals. You think about the different avenues of funding that are being made available through an $8 billion set aside to our Native people. There's a federal response that I think is appropriate. We are looking at extraordinarily devastating economic impact. Some are not going to make it.
And do you?
But what we need to do is we need to be there on the federal side to help. I've heard from so many people who say, you know, I've been working my whole life. I've built my business up. I've never asked for a government handout. And I don't even know, you know, what I should do, who I should call. And what I've been saying is this is not a government handout. If you've been running your business, if you've been building this up for 30 years and you are told you can't operate tomorrow, not because you don't have employees, not because you don't want to, not because of mismanagement, but because the government has said for the safety of the people in your community, you can't operate by our decision. And so government's response needs to be there to assist, and that's the role that we're playing right now. So just suggesting that the bankruptcy is the answer here is not the direction I'm taking.
And do you think it's appropriate use of government funding to, say, bail out oil companies?
Well, again, when we say bail out, I think we need to be very, very careful because it's kind of an explosive term. What we have done in these, what they call 13-3 facilities through the Treasury Department, is making available to those businesses, make available loans to them. Now, remember, these are loans, these are not grants. So if the expectation is that these come back to the government, they're repaid with interest. And so the opportunity for those in the oil and gas sector to take advantage of those same types of loans that a restaurant would be able to take advantage of, or a manufacturer would be able to take advantage of.
Okay, thanks for making that distinction. What can you do, you, as our senator from Alaska, what can you do to support the United States Postal Service? And what will happen in Alaska if Congress allows the Postal Service to fold?
I don't think we should even be talking about allowing it to fold. We know that in our state, our post office is it. It's what we rely on for mail and packages, medication. So making sure that we have reliable postal service has to be a priority. I have been involved in making sure that we can provide some support for the Postal Service by relieving them of the requirement to pre-fund retiree benefits. This is a significant part of what contributes to the Postal Service's financial deficit. It's just been eroding their stability. We did provide $10 billion in additional borrowing authority. And so I know there's some talk right now. I don't know whether it's talk or whether it's just rumor that Treasury is looking to impose some significant, you know, if you want to call it handcuffs, but limitations on that borrowing authority. I haven't seen that. What I'm looking to do is work with others to improve the sustainability of the Postal Service, make it more stable and really more enduring.
It's not been too long ago. I heard you quoted as saying that the Postal Service may change in its form. Is that what you were talking about, relieving it of its responsibility to fund?
Exactly. On the pre-funding of the retiree benefits, that is the most significant liability that the Postal Service has right now. They don't receive money from the federal taxpayer. They operate off of postal products for its revenues almost entirely. They don't receive any federal appropriations except for some very small amounts for mailing books to the blind and for mailing ballots to Americans that are living overseas. So, you know, if it weren't for the pre-funding of the retiree benefits, you know, they'd be doing fine. They would be doing fine. They're not this entity that is this big draw on the treasuries.
And the final question that I have is, given the massive unemployment numbers connected to this public health crisis, in what ways do you think health insurance should be tied to employment?
Well, you know, that was one of the reasons that there was such a focus on PPP, because the intent or the design of that program was really to keep employees connected to their employer, recognizing that so many receive their health insurance through their employer. That was one of the underpinnings of PPP and why we wanted to make sure that there would be that forgiveness for keeping the employees on. It's a fair question to ask. I think we have seen so many who have lost employment, and you know, their employers were not able to take advantage of the PPP or other, and as a consequence, they no longer have their health care. And so looking at that, as well as some of the other hard matters that we're facing now in this COVID world, this is what we're doing. I am now getting on a call. I've got to excuse myself. We've got the Secretary of Labor who's visiting with the delegation. We're trying to make sure that from the DOL perspective, we're going to be able to have fisheries with workers in the state this summer. So That's my next initiative today. But thank you for the time this afternoon, Kathleen, and for the good questions.
Senator, I thank you so much. I so appreciate your time.
Good to be with you. Thanks, and take care. Bye-bye now.